here. And after about three or four attempts, the nurse, the poor psych nurse, he's, you know, they're underpaid, they're understaffed, they see jerks like me every day. He said, "Fred, you open your mouth one more time and you're going to stay here a lot longer. So go back in there and own your own shit." Oh my God. I've heard those words before, but the timing was absolutely perfect. I heard it. I heard this thing that cracked me open. I slunk back into that snake pit. I got on that plastic toboggan, and I saw over my head a skylight, the only source of natural light. It was just an eggshell thin piece of plastic, but I knew on the outside of that window, that thing was the fresh air of freedom, and I wanted it. I didn't want to be where I was. I couldn't believe my eyes that I was where I was and I belonged there. I didn't stand out. I fit right in. I was exactly where I needed to be. And that's what that own your own shit thing did for me. I saw myself. I was right there. And I had a moment of realization that I got a lot of kinetic energy right here. This is a very potent experience. I can ride it one of two directions. I can drive it down to the end, or I can take it up to the top. And not only can I take it up to the top, because I'm here, I know the smells, I know that awful egg thing they try to feed you in the morning, I know how that tastes, I can tell somebody else, me too. Anyone who says, "Well, I've been there," it's like, me too. The last choice that was offered to me was my husband, who showed up. Now, he works for the hospital that I was taken to frequently, and he had to show up in his scrubs with the employee ID to claim this mess. It was embarrassing as hell for him. And here he is in his clinical gear, and he's got a piece of paper, and he says, "I'm not taking you home anymore. This is it. You're done. But if you make this phone call, I'll think about taking you back." He had done the footwork for me. He told me that it was a rehab facility. He said, "They won't let me do this for you. You've got to call them, and you have to ask for help." So I called this place in Oakland, open robe, treaded socks, nurse's station, and I think I need help. Merritt Peralta Institute, MPI, Oakland, California. I highly recommend it. They said, "Well, okay, we'll interview you. We'll let you know if you're a candidate. We have inpatient and outpatient." And I got an appointment on Monday, which was 3 days. You're supposed to be sober for 3 days. And I immediately felt this sense of relief. Like, maybe there's something I could do about this. Maybe someone else has an answer. Because when I was calling these places in blackout, I know what I was doing. I was calling AA for the secret. "Do you guys know what page it is on? What's the recipe? What do I do to stop drinking?" And all they could say back to me was, "Have you been to a meeting?" Don't you guys know how to say anything else? These people at MPI, they had a different plan. They had a plan. And I felt this mantle of relief come off my shoulders. They allowed me to go home a day early from the snake pit. And I went back home and I showed my husband all the places that I'd been hiding my bottles. And he showed me all the other places that I'd been hiding my bottles. And I felt like, okay, the gig's up. I'm gonna drink in public. I'm gonna drink in open. I'm gonna finish all these bottles. And I'm gonna make it my last drink. And I'm gonna smoke as much as I can because I think this is really gonna work. I really had belief that this was gonna work. There was just something inside that had changed in me, wanting that fresh air, knowing that I had the kinetic energy to do something about it, and an offer to do it. So I went to this place, MPI, and they said they would take me as an inpatient, and I didn't want to do that to my husband. I felt it would be unfair to him to leave him alone for 30 days, that I really needed to be home. And it turned out that an outpatient program is a lot harder because you've got to walk past all that crap that you've been living in to get to and from. So I'd go early in the morning for an evening program, and I'd stay all day long. I'm in the cafeteria. They thought I was an employee. I was there all day. I'm taking the hypnotism thing, and I'm doing the neurodiverse thing, and I'm doing everything they offer, everything. I'm taking all the suggestions, I'm being humble, and it dawned on me that maybe this thing's gonna work. I did the AA, went to found a sponsor, I found another sponsor. I kept picking my dad for some reason for sponsors. It was like, good Lord, well, I've gotta get away from this family thing. The sponsor that finally worked was a guy that came up to me and gave me his phone number and said, "Call me before your next drink, and I don't wanna be your sponsor." And I told him, "It was too late, you're already my sponsor." He was a quirky guy, we got along great. He imbued me in the importance of service. We went and took meetings to people that couldn't get out of their homes. We took meetings all over the place. And when he died of pancreatic cancer a year later, I felt like I didn't lose a friend. I felt that I had a spiritual gift that couldn't have come from anywhere else but from God. And it